The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everyone, I had another opportunity to go on the show, quite frankly, the other night, and I asked him if I could share my segment with you. He said, absolutely. So what you're about to hear is my appearance on Quite Frankly. You can look in the description below for any links to find where you can go to listen to this show on a regular basis, because I absolutely love Frank, and I've been listening to Quite Frankly since I've been driving truck. So let's get to me on Quite Frankly right now.
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
I'm so happy you're here.
Call me up and ask me, would I like to go with you and see a movie?
Okay, guys and gals, welcome to the show. I have a few things I want to bring up because I know that Tony probably has something to say about it. First thing is from the Sun, but let me just say real quick before we get started, really get into it. More and more people getting in touch with me about last night. I know that we had some technical issues, but I just stayed off air. I didn't want to keep going, but I had a good connection with Alan and Angela. So I just recorded, conducted the interview and uploaded it afterwards. And it was a great interview. And quite a few of you reached out. Those of you who are already listening on the shortwave, and they say, Frank, you got to get on here. I'm going to do this. Now, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it every night of the week because, you know, it doesn't cost people anything to listen on shortwave radio. But for me to get this show syndicated, I'm going to have to fund it somehow. So I'm thinking maybe one night a week for now. And I don't know which night that is. I'll work it out with Alan and Angela. That'd be nice. But over time, I'm going to have to find a sponsor for that or something. But it's so cozy. My shortwave radio already came in. It already came in. I want to show it to you. Hold on. I ordered it last night. This thing showed up today. It was like $34 on Amazon. And what the hell? Here you go. There it is. Digital AM FM shortwave radio. And, you know, it takes 4 D cell batteries, but it's also rechargeable. So, I mean, I think it's pretty awesome. So the best thing is that I went to go pick it up and I was talking to my mother, and she mentions to me that she ordered one too. I guess she was listening to the show last night, or I guess she was listening to the rerun, because who the hell was listening to the show last night? And she got herself one too. I mean, it's great because you AM, FM, it's all there. But now, I mean, I got to figure this out. I have to get into this. And I thank you all so much for being so so cool about it. And it's nice to meet so many more people out there who are already ahead of the game and have given me a little bit of a, encouragement, a boost to expand the show into more durable areas of communication. Oh, one more thing. I want to make a congratulatory announcement to Dennis and Marianne LeBlanc, who won the all-time, well, we'll do it again next year. But for now, we just say, hey, post the best Halloween costume you ever put out, you ever did over the last however many years. Put it out there. Dennis and Marianne LeBlanc, they won it. We gave them some spotlight on the bulletin. Here they are a couple of years ago, dressed as both Bruce and Caitlyn Jenner. So one is on the Wheaties box and one's in front of Vanity Fair cross-dressing. And it's just, we said congratulations. So they got a little chocolate. They got a little silver. And they're getting some coffee too. Congratulations to both of them, Dennis and Marianne. Happy Halloween. Nope, didn't mean to do that. Anyway, here is what we've got going on before I bring on Tony. This is from The Sun. Dream experiment. Dream on. Two people able to communicate in their dreams after groundbreaking experiment. Two people managed to communicate through their dreams in a groundbreaking experiment, researchers claim. Using ambiguous apparatus, researchers at California-based REM Space say two individuals in separate homes exchanged a message while asleep. The message was one single word, which the company has not shared. The startup, which aims to enhance sleep and lucid dreaming, also remained tight-lipped on what equipment was used to achieve the milestone. However, the study mentions specially designed equipment, as shown in the video above. What video is that? Let's get to that. Hold on. What video? These are not videos. Those are not videos. Okay, anyway, the apparatus tracked participants' brainwaves and other biological data during the experiment. Then a server was used to detect when a participant entered a lucid dream. People are usually aware of their consciousness when they are in a lucid dream. Once one person was in a lucid dream state, the server sent them a one-word message through earbuds. The participant then repeated the word in their dream, which the server captured and stored for the second participant. When the second person entered a lucid dream state 8 minutes later, the server transmitted the stored message to them, which they repeated upon waking. Yesterday, communicating in dreams seemed like science fiction, REM Space CEO and founder Michael Radula said in a statement. Tomorrow, it will be so common we won't be able to imagine our lives without this technology. This opens the door to countless commercial applications, reshaping how we think about communication and interaction in the dream world. Now, I'm most definitely going to be saving this for Halloween night when we have Dr. Albert Taylor coming back on to talk about his astral travels. But commercial applications. Oh, man. Now, there's so much more here because, of course, when you bring in people for lucid dreaming, you're talking about people who have already trained into getting themselves into a lucid state. Okay. To be able to bring that on, to be able to trigger it, that takes a little bit of practice. So we are talking some Monroe Institute techniques here. We're talking a lot of stuff. There's a lot of background on this that I would love to know about. But I think that we should be able to get a lot of this on the table tonight with our guest. With our guest, who we should bring on right now. So let's do that, shall we? All right. Let's see. Now, Tony is here. He's a, as you all know, he's the host of the Confessionals podcast, where he explores the supernatural and the unexplained. By focusing on shared experiences, Tony has created a platform that connects listeners with the incredible stories of encounters with cryptids, UFOs, and other phenomena. He also produced an action documentaries, including Expedition Dogman. We got to talk about that a little bit, definitely tonight. The Shape of Shadows and Sasquatch and the Missing Man. Tony's deep curiosity and sense of wonder have driven him beyond the microphone, taking him on a personal journey of exploration and discovery. As Tony continues to push the boundaries, he invites others to explore the unknown alongside of him. And we have plenty to talk about with him tonight. Tony, how much time have you spent talking about tonight's topic of dreaming?
More than I ever thought I would. More than I ever thought I would. So thanks for having me back.
Oh, dude, it's great to have you on. Now, it's crazy that it's only been earlier on this year, because every 3 months feels like an entire calendar year has passed. But it's only been a few months, and I know that you've been hard at work. So welcome, and I hope that all's well with your family.
Oh, everything's good, man. Last time I talked to you, you were, I think, at your house in the studio, in the closet.
Absolutely. I was in the walk-in closet, Studio B. Yeah. but I'm back in A right now.
And I felt cheated, man. I was like, man, I didn't get the full experience.
Well, your first time calling in was during my Christmas episode last year, and that was in Studio A, but of course, it was only a 5-minute call, so I get it. I get you, man. So, okay, let's talk about this for a second, because we have something in the after hours tonight from you. The after hours tonight, we're going to have Missing 411, The Hunted. Then we have The Confessionals, Dreamscape Warfare. And then we have some more with reality shifting stuff with Cynthia Larson afterwards. But when I saw the Dreamscape Warfare from you, and I saw this Sun article, I had to bring it up because this is pretty pretty big stuff. This dream experiment connecting two consciousnesses in some kind of a state like this it opens up Pandora's box for so many things, good and bad, and everything in between. So tell me a little bit about what you might have covered in the realm of the dream world and astral travels.
Well, I have not done any astral traveling myself, but I have talked to people who have. And I'll tell you, I think what we need to do is start looking at the dream realm, the dreamscape, whatever you want to call it, in a way that I feel like the way we need to look at it is when you go dreaming, when you go to sleep, you are not just turning off the light switch in your brain and letting your brain rest. Something else happens. And I don't know exactly what that something else is, but people are living lives in the dream realm. And they're communicating with other people. And there's different layers to this. And how I was told, I can't remember exactly who recently brought this to my attention, but the idea is that there are just dreams. Like, you know, I always use the example, if Barney is chasing you down the road, it's a dream. But there are these lucid dreams that people have. And it's like you're in a dream and your consciousness is in an area that is very recognizable. So like maybe you're in your home and everything looks like it normally does, except for there's a couple things off. Like maybe the desk you usually sit at is on the other side of the room, or you're missing a chair, but it feels real. It feels like you're really there. And it's because you actually are really there. And in this what I come to call a realm, there's interactions with other people. And then there's another level to it, which is beyond the lucid dream state, which there are people who get to the point where they are not dreaming. This isn't a lucid dream. It's literally another existence that you're living in another realm. Mm. And so when I first started the podcast, I did not care about dreams at all. And I was like, just talk to me about Bigfoot, man. Like, I don't want to talk about your dreams. And I'd have people emailing me about it, and I just wasn't interested. And over time, through certain people's experiences and telling me certain stories, I've come to understand that the dream realm is far more complex than just your brain having an imagination of its own. And, you know, I think last time we talked on the show, you know, I kind of put my stake in the ground as a Christian. And even when you look at the biblical side of things, like the dreams are a very real thing in the Bible that require interpretation.
Like that it is a form in a way that God and other beings communicate with human beings. So the idea that, you know, like I don't just pat my kids on the back when they wake up and say, oh, it's just a dream, go back to bed. Like, I'm like, tell me what happened. You know, like, yeah. I need to know what's going on here. Because maybe we get to it later on tonight or something, but you know, like doing what I do and stuff kind of puts a target on your back. And, I think that at times, that target comes in the dream realm for sure.
You know, it's funny you say that because there's so many things that you said that ring true. First of all, number one, there's just so many frivolous subconscious expressions of thought that pop up in dreams that you know exactly what everything meant and why you know why can get twisted and just how things just spin out of control. But then there are other times where there's just no recollection of anything, and you tend to think about it. I mean, whatever kind of quote or whatever kind of philosophical argument has been laid out there about the remembering life before birth, and what if, you know, death is the same exact process of being born. You're just, you know, obviously a lot more conscious and a lot more aware in your later years than you were when you were an infant. But still, when you go to sleep at night, is it just the other side of the coin? Do you fall asleep in one place and wake up in another? And there is a pretty impenetrable veil between those worlds that it's hard for you to recollect unless you train in a certain way. But then there's other little things, like when we were kids, I remember my brother telling some of his friends, like when they would go away, I remember him, he was talking to one of his friends on the phone before he went to bed. Like, it was almost like he made a pact with them at school. He's like, I'm going to call you around 7:30 before we went to bed at like 8 or something. And he says, and they actually set up a place where to meet in the dream world. Okay, so you're going to look for this, find me here. Obviously, they're just making things up. But when you look at this now, and people are transmitting, they don't go into the details, they're transmitting thoughts, they're transmitting messages. There is definitely common ground space in an ethereal realm that we can do things in. And I've done plenty of my own interviews as well to be confident in that too. The real question is, how much more are we, everyday people, going to be able to understand the mechanics of that realm? Because it's obviously it is very occulted information. There's a lot of reasons why all types of special interests don't want average people to know about what we're plugged into.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you have to be careful with it because you're dealing with something that, at least initially, you really don't understand. Even if you studied it, until you actually do it and get your hands on it, you really don't know what you're in for. And for me, I have no interest in doing it because I've heard enough stories that I'm like, nah, I'm good where I'm at.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there's times that things happen accidentally. There are people who, you know, they have these dreams and it just kind of happens for them. It wasn't on purpose. There's a guy that I talked to years ago. He had a dream where it was like this big long story, but the punchline of it was he was exiting the dream and he was walking through a doorway with other people as he was leaving the dream. And he looks behind him and there's a doorway behind him on the other side of a room and there's people coming in. It's like ushering people out of a dream, out of like this room that's a dream room. And and the way I perceive this whole story is that these were all people's consciousness interacting with each other in this dream room. Because he's leaving with all these other people. He turns around, looks behind him and sees a sister coming into the room with other people. And the next day he sees his sister and she's like, I had a dream about you last night. It was real short, but like you were leaving a room when I was walking in and you looked back at me. And it's like, that's exactly what he was dreaming. And so there is this like this idea of a shared space somewhere else. And it's hard for us to comprehend it because we're such physical beings. Like this is all we can comprehend. But I'm getting to the point where I like, first of all, I'm not even at getting to the point. I'm at the point, like, I don't question there being a spiritual existence beyond this physical realm that every human has some kind of tie to. And with that said, I think that other realm is far more complex and hard for us to understand at times than what we can even possibly fathom. There are people who interact with each other deliberately in these dream realms, into these other states of existence. They carry out orders and missions. They work for other entities. It gets pretty deep, and I've had enough people that have contacted me that have very similar stories for me to say there is actually something up with this, and you know, not all of it is peaches and cream.
Yeah, well, you know, what pops up for me is that line from The Matrix when Neo is still trying to figure out what happened, you know, the whole nature of this thing. He's been red-pilled, you know, he's living in the underworld over there, and he's starting to be taught about how to, you know, go back into the Matrix, do their thing, conduct missions and all that. And the very basic question of, you know, what happens if you die in the Matrix? What have you, you know, what happens if you die outside of your body? And I believe the response was, well, the body cannot survive without the mind. And that brings me to this next question, which is obviously very, very related. We were having a discussion a few weeks ago. I had a friend of mine who was an exorcist on the show we were talking about psychic travels. We were talking about out-of-body experiences and other related issues. And Anton LaVey's death came up in conversation, namely testimony that his soul was intentionally detached from his body, that the mind was detached from the body, that he was in a state of, you know, projecting, astral projecting or anything like that, and he was psychically sabotaged and essentially killed in that way. And this came up just in passing on the show, and your interview with Pastor Dave Bryan was suggested to me several times, so I knew that when you came back on, this is one of the things we had to discuss. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, for sure. It was one of the stories that for me has layers for the show, but also for me. First, I'll say this. When people leave their body through astral projection, now, again, I've never done it, but I've had several people tell me that when they come back to go back into their body, there's an entity there waiting for them. And I don't ever really get a clear picture if it's actually physically, or not, I don't even want to say physically, like what spiritually physically, I don't even know how to describe it, but if it's actively trying to prevent you from entering your body. But I do know that some people have conveyed that at least they sense that it was trying to keep them from getting back into their body. And, you know, that's terrifying. And as you'll see on the Dreamscape, I think I call it Dreamscape Warfare, which you're gonna be playing later tonight, Vicky Joy Anderson talks about how sleep paralysis is the last stage of this whole, like, people often, when they have a sleep paralysis experience, they're like, I had a sleep paralysis experience, and that is the main part of the show. That's like the exiting of the show. Like, there's a whole other thing that has happened before that many people don't even remember. Dave Bryan is a pastor of a church, I think, called Glad Tidings in California. And I heard about him somewhere, and I reached out to him, and his secretary got it all scheduled, and I brought him on the show. And I just told him, I said, I want you to tell your story. I want you to tell the story of how you found yourself interacting with Anton LaVey. And for like 2.5 hours of a recording we did, he just kind of spilled the beans and just dropped it. And so there, obviously we don't have 2.5 hours, so I'll give the Cliff Note version. But his dad had a friend who was a missionary, I think, in Chile. And this man, after his dad died, came to him and said that God told him that he was to be Dave Bryan's spiritual father now, basically like a spiritual mentor. And he goes, you need to read this book. He gives him a book and he said, you need to read this because spiritual warfare is coming your way. And Dave gets this book and he doesn't really think twice about it. He puts it aside, doesn't really consider reading it. And I think it was about 8 years went by and he never read the book. And he gets a phone call from this guy and he said, hey, I'm coming to the States. I'll be there tomorrow. You haven't read the book. God told me that. You've been disobedient. And it's starting a week from now. And so he met with him and he, after the meeting, he spent a week, that entire week in prayer. He went to church on Sunday and preached his sermon, did what he normally does. So this was a week later and he does an altar call. And, you know, a lot of churches, they do altar calls for people to come and, you know, salvation and stuff. But this one woman comes in response to the altar call. And she was particularly disturbed. And Dave had already established a habit in his family that they would bring people home that need shelter. They had an open door kind of policy. And so they bring her home to their home and they give her shelter and they kind of start adopting her into their family. And when he does this, there's a lot of like spiritual warfare that kicks up, a lot of demonic interactions, a lot of rebuking in the name of Jesus that started taking place in his home. And I think he probably at that point understood there's something going on with this woman, but he just didn't really understand what. And then one night they're driving somewhere in California and they're driving through Native American land. I don't know if it was an actual reservation or what, but there was a spirit, there was an entity that had a stronghold in this land. And he said it actually came and attacked them while they were in their car. And this woman that was with them that came into the church, she was out cold in the car, almost like something had almost like taken over her or something. Like she was gone. She wasn't waking up. And there's this whole story with this interaction, but he winds up pulling the car over because I think if I remember correctly, the doors on the car started flying open. Like it was like physical activity going on. And so he pulls over and he has this interaction with this entity and it tells him that the woman that's in his car, he came to kill her or it came to kill her. And that he has a right to kill her because of some kind of, I guess it was like some kind of oath or some kind of ritual that she broke. And there was more detail to it that I don't really understand to begin with to be able to even relate. But at that point, Dave understood, okay, there is really something going on with this woman because like, we've never experienced this crazy stuff until she got here. You know, it's typical for pastors to have spiritual warfare, but this kind of level activity was never really a usual occurrence.
Oh yeah. And to have to be, you know, pretty much caring for her as well. I mean, it's not like you can just, right. Say, hey, we'll let's take a break. We'll see you next week. I mean, this is your responsibility now. So yeah. I have to imagine she ends up being a pivotal part of this cord cutting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so go ahead.
She wakes up and he basically says, "Who are you really? Like, I need to know who you are. If you don't tell me who you actually are, I'm leaving you here on the side of the road, and we're going to drive by and we're going to pretend we never knew you." And she said, "If I tell you, will you promise not to kick me out of the family?" And he said, "I promise. If you're truthful with me, I promise I won't." And that's when she told him that she was the daughter of Anton LaVey and she had been fleeing the Church of Satan. And the spiritual warfare that they've been experiencing was from her, from what she was fleeing. And now that she has told him, her father will be aware that he knows who she is and the attacks will be kicked up even more. And so right there gives a hint to the astral, like he is doing things actively in the astral realm that he is able to understand that Dave knows who she is at that moment. And so they take her home and the whole story unfolds and spiritual warfare is really kicking up. And it gets to, I believe it was Halloween night or Halloween Eve, the eve of Halloween. She was supposed to be part of a ritual. She, for 6 years, had every Halloween gone through a ritual. I forget what the rituals are called, but basically the seventh year is the seventh ritual, and she was supposed to be become the bride of Satan. And she didn't want to be the bride of Satan. And so she had run. And that's what spawned all this spiritual activity. So her father, Anton LaVey, she had asked Dave Bryan to legally adopt her. And so he agreed to do this, and they changed her name legally and everything. But Anton LaVey was still putting claims in on her. And the night that the ritual was supposed to take place, Anton LaVey astral projects out of his body, comes to her, it takes over her body, and basically possesses her to a point where she's acting irrationally. She is not, she's accusing Dave of abuse. She calls the police. The police come. They almost arrest Dave.
So this was prior to 1997 when he died then?
Yes. This is the night that he died.
Okay.
Basically, some people within the police department or the fire department that showed up knew Dave, and they basically talked to the people in charge, and he's like, listen, just give this guy a chance to prove his innocence here. We know him. He's a local pastor. Like, this doesn't seem right. He proves his innocence. They let him go. And that night, he, instead of just going to sleep, he goes and looking for his daughter because she's gone. Like, LaVey took her. And there's a whole story behind that. But long story short, he's praying, and the Holy Spirit said to him, pray that the silver cord gets cut. And so he calls the people in his church that, you know, are like prayer warriors, and they all go into agreements that night that they start praying that the silver cord would be cut. And I'm not even sure if he understood what that meant at the time, but they started praying. And they pray. He was standing outside, I believe, a hotel room that LaVey was in, but he wasn't moving, obviously, because he was out of body. And that night, the silver cord was cut, and LaVey died. If you, if your silver cord is cut, you're not coming back. It's game over. So, Pastor Dave Bryan in Glad Tidings, California, his story is that this is what happened to him. And the night that he prayed for the silver cord to be cut, LaVey died. His daughter is now, LaVey's former daughter, now Pastor Ryan's daughter, is happily married. I think she's in her 40s now. I don't know exactly where she lives, but I did look her up, and she is a real person. She's very low key, doesn't really want to talk about all the stuff, I guess, but she is a real person. So, it's a pretty wild story. If anybody gets a chance to listen to the whole thing, like, he has so much detail. It's wild.
It is wild. I mean, you know, I have friends who have had, and I'm talking very, very sober-minded friends who have told me about being harassed by living people in their lives who know how to do this kind of dream world traversing to kind of haunt the living as a member of the living, like, you know, not even passed on. But to think about that, to have some sort of an inside scoop, hey, listen, this guy's out of his body, let's cut the cord, this almost like spiritual umbilical cord. It's a it's such a crazy thing that makes so much sense. It has comic book value to it, but I don't think that the world is as cold and solid and simple as I once did so many years ago. So this, it makes so much, and you're talking about here really also, the underlying thing for all of us to take away is that everything comes with risks. You know, I focus on the news. If I focus on the news every day, I risk sleeping, slipping into a deep abyss of depression. Mm-hmm. If you astral project, especially if you don't know what the hell you're doing, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, as you're talking about there, especially with those like kind of spiritual bouncers. Yeah. Anything that may stand as a hurdle between you re-entering your body after your session is that's something that's crazy. I've heard about people talking about psychic spying, psychic warfare between nations. How there would almost be like psychic guards placed outside of, you know, really secret facilities to make sure that nobody got in, whether they're in this realm or the other realm. And my God, there's just there's so much that, well, what about you in particular, Tony? Do you ever find that your paranormal pursuits attract unwanted spiritual attention?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wouldn't even be doing all this stuff if it wasn't something I felt God called me to do because of all the baggage that it brings. And we have an experience here where it actually involves the Dave Bryant story, essentially, because a few weeks after I recorded with Dave Bryant, I had a guy in my studio by the name Hunter. And he's from Middle Tennessee, and he was a returning guest on the show. And he came in and we had a great conversation. Two of my friends were sitting at the table with us. It was a great four guys around the table. And was trying to do my best impersonation of Joe Rogan. And towards the end of it, he goes, "I got one more thing I got to talk to you about, but I don't know how to bring it up to you." And he's kind of like, you know, dawdling with it, hemming and hawing. And I'm just like, "Come on, man. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what's up?" And he asked me if a certain number meant anything to me. And it did, because it was my house number. And I looked at my brother and I looked at him. I was like, "Yeah, but we can't talk about it on the show." And he goes, "Well, I had a dream about you. And I was standing at the end of your driveway and on your house was number." And I was like, "Okay." And I told him to describe to me what he saw, and he accurately described the road that I live on, my driveway, how it comes off the road, the shape of my driveway, which is unique, what my house looks like, everything. And the only thing that wasn't accurate, which is, again, lucid dreams are often, it's accurate with little details off, is he said my house number was on my house, and it's not on my house. It's on my mailbox at the end of the driveway where he would have been standing. But he said, he saw, it was nighttime, and he saw me getting out of my truck at the end of my driveway at my house. And he said, when I got out of my truck, he saw two black cloaked entities standing behind me. And he said, "You walked around the back of your house and they followed you into your house."
Son of a bitch.
And I was like, "All right." Like, I was really disturbed, you know. I was like, because here's the thing, like, so Hunter, he's a worship pastor in the middle of Tennessee. I have a pre-existing relationship with him because he was a former guest, and we struck up a friendship, you know. It wasn't like best friends, but we kept in touch with each other. He's a private contractor. He has his own company. He coaches his children's softball and baseball. He's a pastor. He's in the ministry. Like, the idea of when I call Hunter, the best time to get a hold of him is about 9 o'clock at night when he's walking through a grocery store because he's busy. Mm. And the idea that Hunter would drive 4 hours east to find where I live just in hopes that one day he's back on my show to play this prank on me. But I approached it like that. I told him, I said, "If you're lying to me, just tell me. I won't be mad. I just need to know if you're lying to me." And I would have been mad, but like, I was trying to tell, you know, and he actually got insulted. He's like, "Dude, like, I don't have that kind of time. You know it. Like, I'm it's really frustrating that you're not listening to me." And so I called Pastor Dave Bryant and I said, "Dave, like, you and I just had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. And the book that he told me that the guy told him to read that he didn't read is the same book that I had sitting on my bookshelf or my nightstand for 2 years. I bought it 2 years ago and I hadn't read it." And it was a book called "He Came to Set the Captives Free" by Rebecca Brown. And I called him and I talked to him about this. And I was like, "Listen, I need to talk to somebody about this. Like, what is this?" And without skipping a beat, Pastor Dave Bryan said, "Those are druids and they're following you. You have witches following you." And and that kind of made sense to me, to be honest with you, because I've been really feeling like a strong pull that God's been preparing me or warning me is more like it, like strong spiritual warfare was coming my way. And so I just didn't really know where it was going to be coming from. And when I interviewed Dave Bryan, I told him what I just told you about the book and all that stuff. And this is before Hunter had come to my studio. And for about 2 or 3 weeks before Hunter got there, I had been thinking to myself, like, really, am I overreacting? Am I just, you know, do I do this too much? And like, you know, I feel like spiritual warfare is coming, but it's just my gauge is off, you know? And then Hunter comes and does that. And I was like, it was a confirmation that I was on track with what I felt God speaking to me. And so Dave Bryan tells me that. We pray about it and I keep moving forward. I'm like, I don't know what to do with it. So I guess we'll just hopefully we don't run across druids in my driveway. And then it was in August of this year, I went to a, I was asked to speak at a media conference and I was there. It was a Christian media conference. And the first night I had a guy come over to me and I, he goes, "Hey, nice podcast." And I said to him, "Oh, thanks, man. You listen?" He's like, "Not really, but I just needed to, I need to talk to you." I'm like, "Okay, cool. What's up?" And he goes, "Do you ever have any issues with what you do?" And usually I'd say to people, "No, I'm good, man. Like, you know, God's got me. He called me to do this. God's going to protect me," kind of thing. Mm. But because I don't really get personal with people, especially people I don't know. And I couldn't help it. Like I was almost like biting my tongue and I just said, "Yeah, I got two witches following me." And, he steps aside and there's a guy standing behind him and he goes, "This is my friend, Rob. He's a deliverance pastor." And Rob came to me. He's like, "I want to pray a prayer of impartation on you that you have eyes to see and ears to hear the attack before it comes." And so,
this is a person, this is a person who just essentially told his friend, he just saw you. You don't have any personal or history with him. He just knew that he needed to pray over you.
I spoke at the conference that day. And so that's how they were introduced to who I was. And so this guy, Rob, prays for me. And I'm the kind of person, I kind of put up my hands on my hips kind of thing or in my pocket. Like I'm not real, like, even though I go to a Pentecostal church, I'm not very charismatic typically. Mm-hmm. But he goes, "You need to put your hands out and receive this gift." And I'm like, "Okay." So I put my hands out. I kid you not, I felt the palms of my hands get warm and this spiritual heaviness just was lifted off of me. And there's a whole backstory with that I'm not even gonna get into. But I felt amazing. Like I was crying. I was like, "This is crazy. Like, why am I crying in front of these complete strangers? This is ridiculous." And the next day I was going to the green room to get a drink and I ran to one of the other speakers and I started talking to him and he said, "Hey man, I checked out your YouTube channel. I love it and stuff. I've been passing around to Rick Renner overseas and this, that, and the other," and just saying all this stuff. And I'm like, "Man, this is really cool." So we start talking and we went back to the green room. We're sitting there chatting and he starts talking about, like, you know, my spiritual health and all that stuff. And he asked to pray for me. I said, "Yeah, I'm not going to deny somebody praying for me. So let's pray." And so we stand up and he starts praying for me. And he's a prophet. So like his name's Joseph Z and he does a lot of prophetic ministry. And so he's praying for me and he just kind of pauses and he has his hand on my chest and his other hand on my shoulder. And he kind of pauses and he goes, "And you witches, I see you and I bind you in the name of Jesus Christ."
Get the hell out.
And I was like,
damn, bro.
You know
what's crazy is that it's not only the confirmation that, okay, well, there's issues and people see it, but it's almost like at that point, help arrives as well.
Yeah.
It's almost like the banners are called in and any ally in the area that has eyes to see, like really see, mm-hmm. they showed up. That's a really, really incredible thing, man.
I'll tell you what, to kind of put a bow on that. So we've been going through probably some of the strongest spiritual attacks I've ever felt in my life in the last 2 weeks. There's a whole thing with that. But I was driving home today from the office and I was just kind of, I wasn't even really praying. I think I was praying a little bit, but I was just contemplating. And it just hit me that all the stuff that I'm experiencing, and when people say spiritual warfare, you often think like, "Oh, demons are coming to get you," and you see them in the corner and it scares you. Sometimes that might be it, but like spiritual warfare and spiritual attack can come in many different forms, and I'm learning that. And I've been learning that in the past couple weeks. It can attack you, your mental health, to your finances, to your schedule, and I've been coming to understand that. I used to be like, I don't want to over-spiritualize things. And now I'm getting to a point where I'm like, "God, you let me know if I'm over-spiritualizing it. And until you say so, I'm going to treat this like it's a spiritual attack." And it hit me when I was driving home today. I was like, eyes to see, ears to hear. Ah. And all of a sudden, I was like, that guy back in August prayed that I would have eyes to see and ears to hear. And here I am two months later going through some of the strongest spiritual attacks I've ever experienced. And I see it coming. I see the writing on the wall. I see where the attacks are coming. And I see it in other people's lives. Like my brother, my wife, we're all getting hit hard. And as they're going through things, I'm like, that's spiritual warfare. That's a spiritual attack. We need to pray about that. And I was just like, man, this is full circle.
Okay.
This is full circle.
So let's widen this out, because I'm sure that there's a lot of people in the audience who are, you know, some of them are probably confused. Others probably write a lot of this off. But there's probably many, many more that are saying, oh, yeah, no, this is the story of my life the last few years as well. There's a new element to it, a new element of tension. It goes beyond just, you know, just what has been done to us in a physical sense with, you know, 2020 and restrictions and the destruction of our routines and everything else that's happening. There is another element to it that just feels, I don't know, like it's non-terrestrial. I'll say mm-hmm. that. You're discussing individual cases, though. Widen that out beyond clan warfare, beyond the warfare between, you know, LaVey's Satanic Church and all of their, you know, the infighting that goes on there, you know, how governments can go against each other. Let's talk about widespread spiritual warfare. What are we in it right now, or is it going to take on some kind of a more definitive final form? Is it always going to be an individual experience, or is there going to be a collective experience? Have you ever talked to anybody about that?
No, but I mean, maybe I can't recall off the top of my head, but I mean, certainly, we've been experiencing it for a long time now. I think, I think you just brought up 2020 or COVID or something. Maybe just, I hear that everywhere I go, but, that is a prime example of what I'm talking about, and talking about collectively on a larger scale. You see the woke mind virus that has been just taking over our society and our culture. Like it's literally a virus. This is a spiritual attack that is attacking the human existence. And I think if we start treating this stuff, because like when we're going through this, we're seeing COVID happen. We're seeing, you know, things like calling cards, the way people maybe dye their hair a certain way and they wear certain things, you know they got the mind virus, and you're like, there's something off about this, though. There's something more to it, and we just can't put our finger on it. And I think it's because we're conditioned to not think about ourselves living a spiritual existence, but just a physical existence. When we die, we get put in the ground, we cease to exist. But in reality, we are spiritual beings living a physical existence, and we've divorced ourselves from understanding that. And I think if we start understanding that more, that we are spiritual beings, we've been created to be spiritual beings living in this physical hell that we're in. When this stuff starts happening around us collectively, you can have, again, eyes to see this spiritual attack that is hovering and taking over our culture and society, which, you know, as hokey as it might sound to some people and stuff, is why there is such a call for people of faith to pray for our nation, because it is a spiritual thing, and it needs to be attacked spiritually. And that's a whole other topic I could go down with the idea of what does that even look like? If you're somebody who I believe in God, maybe I'm a Christian, how do I engage in spiritual warfare? And I were to say pray, but it's more than just prayer. For instance, in Daniel chapter 10, Daniel received a vision that he needed explanation on. And when he received that vision, he went into 3 weeks of fasting and prayer. But it wasn't 3 weeks of fasting and prayer like he set out to be like, I'm going to do this for 3 weeks seeking an answer. He set out with fasting and prayer seeking an answer immediately, but it didn't come for 3 weeks. And then in 21 days later, an angel appeared to him and said, when you started praying for understanding, I tried getting to you to show you the understanding of this vision and dream, but the prince of Persia had blocked me for 21 days from getting to you, and it wasn't until Michael the archangel interfered and intervened on my behalf that I could get a way to get to you. So what's important to understand there is that that whole spiritual warfare scene that was played out there didn't exist until Daniel started praying for understanding. And so we have to understand that if you're willing to accept that you live a spiritual existence, then you have to understand that God designed spiritual warfare for your participation. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand that it's not something you do as a defense, but you actually do it as an offense, like Daniel did, where Daniel, there was no battle until he started praying. And so I think that, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of going off of preacher mode here.
It's nothing to be sorry about, because it's bringing up even more for me. It's just something I fell into myself with my own, you know, my own personal prayer. And I realized about a year and a half ago, I really don't know what's best for me. And I really don't know. And that's probably around the time that I stopped asking for things. And I've said this on the show before, what I really settle into is just gratitude and strength and guidance. And just being open for direction. That whole idea of knowing exactly what I need, I still struggle holding on to that, but I've been working to let go of it. So I understand this whole idea of I'm looking for an answer, but you know, when does it come? What is it? It's a very hard thing to let go of, and it's a serious thing to consider, especially when it's so widespread. We're talking about not just affected homes, but we're talking about nations and perhaps an entire planet. And then there is all of the unseen that we were just talking about. Is it really just this planet? How many other realms are in play? How many other dimensions? Like what the hell does the gears behind the face of the clock actually look like? You know, every interpretation has been more psychedelic than the next, and it's just nuts. Let me ask you this: how, you know, last week I sent you an article when Elon Musk, you know, made some statements on behalf of SpaceX, saying that we are the aliens, that UFOs are secret weapon programs, and that he's never saw evidence of extraterrestrial life in any of his work. But you have other people that are in public life, Tucker Carlson, others. That have been really going really, they've been going really hard on the spiritual, biblical aspect of UFOs and aliens and how long they've been here and what the whole, you know, what is going on. It comes back to spiritual warfare, like the war of the heavens kind of things. So I wonder how you interpret that, because, you know, since 2017, the UFO topic and the "Are We Alone?" question has been pushed by some very unsavory people to make it popular again. And I have to imagine it has some role to play in the great revelations to come. But of course, you know, you really have to wonder, you know, who and why and what and all that other stuff.
Yeah. So I leave myself open for understanding on many different avenues with this stuff. I know you've had Tim Alberino on the show several times.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about, and I don't want to mix his words if it's not accurate, but I know he talks about how if we were to take make Christ the center of the universe and not human beings, it allows for the opportunity for you to see how God could create other beings in the universe, because it's not about you as a human, it's about Christ. And I understand that I don't dismiss it, but for me, I tend to lean into more of the supernatural side of it. And when Elon is saying that he doesn't see any existence of aliens in the universe, you bring that up, and I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Hugh Ross soon, and he says that 99% of UFO sightings are explainable, whether it's a fireball in the sky or military involvement. Like he doesn't say that, you know, the military is not responsible for these kind of things, which I think anybody who looks into the topic can say, yeah, like definitely there is an element of the government trying to reverse engineer things or create things that are so far advanced. It's like from another world. And so there's definitely room for that. But he said that there is 1% of these interactions people have that are anomalies. And he's like, there is no rational explanation for what these people have experienced. And he goes into talking about how he believes that of that 1%, it's a very spiritual thing. And again, I don't want to put words in his mouth because I haven't talked to him yet, but he believes that of that 1%, he probably would say 99 to 100% of that 1% is a demonic influence. And you know, it's hard to say that as a certainty for me, because I think even the topic of demons is a very complex topic. There's more than just demonic entities that exist in other realms. But we do know that in other realms, these entities are able to take form and take shape, even through people's experiences. Like, they have a haunting experience, and the person that had the experience, they'll say, like, this was a demonic experience that they had. But that demon that is appearing to them will appear to them in different forms. And so, like, one night it appears a certain way, another night. For one of the more common examples is how people, when they're children, having these interactions, will often describe whatever it is that's appearing to them was appearing to them maybe in the form of their favorite cartoon, or it will appear to them as their favorite toy, just maybe a little bit bigger. It's like to maybe approach them in a comfortable way. But it shows the evidence of these things being able to transform their bodies. So who is to say that if there is a demonic influence involved in this thing, that they aren't transforming their bodies into this ET looking thing? And so people are saying, well, I'm seeing ETs. Everybody's seeing these ETs. It doesn't mean that there's not another way to view this.
Right.
And, you know, it's even that, like, There's a woman on X. She might be a good one for your show. She goes by the name Fringe, and she has been documenting her abduction experiences since 2020. She's been going through this for her whole life. She's in her 50s now, but when she got laid off and had nothing to do in 2020 when the COVID stuff happened, she started dream journaling. She thought these were all dreams, and she started uncovering that these are not dreams. These are actually real things going on. And she has a very unique perspective with this, because one of the things she believes is that with these things that are abducting people, they're interested in the soul. And there's a lot of people that are starting to talk about this, where they're not interested in you as a human and doing weird butt stuff with you. They're interested in the human soul. And people are talking about how they have literal technology that will transfer the human soul into other biological suits in these other realms. And so now you're talking about technology being used in other realms, and the transference of a human soul. I'm not going to claim to understand it all, but what I can say is this: if these things are happening to people and people are experiencing technology in other realms, to me, it's not a stretch then to say that some of that technology could be the quote unquote UAP, UFO stuff coming through to this side that we're experiencing here. And with what Carlson's saying, Lou Alexander's been, hinting around it and stuff. I don't want to say the other guy's name because I don't know if he's public yet, but like, there's people that are talking about this stuff, and I don't know if it's that they're trying to put the breadcrumbs out there for people to grab it and come to their own conclusion, or if they really haven't connected some of these dots on this stuff. But I think there really is an argument to be made that in other realms where people are dreaming and having these interactions, it's not just in your mind, but there's actually real physical technology that's transferable into this realm that we exist in, this physical state. Now, does that technology in the other existence of another realm, does it exist the same way it would exist here? Or does it become physical that we experience physical when it gets here? These are all questions that I have. I don't have answers. I don't think I've ever been abducted, but I talk to people who have. And that's what keeps me awake at night.
Yeah, yeah, because I've read and listened to a lot of abduction stories as well, and they run the gamut, and they are really, really convincing, that's something. And you know, and then of course I go to say, okay, well then how hard would it be? How hard would it be for us to abduct, to you know, bring somebody to a state of hallucination, to stress them out, to show them things and places, to completely disorient them, to make somebody believe that they had an experience in a, you know, I think of Travis Walton. And I'm like, how would it be possible for some, for, you know, the government to be able to simulate Travis Walton's experience, is it the abduction experience, and to, you know, to bring him to a place and make him believe he was inside of the belly of a UFO and have all this stuff happen to him? I don't know. You know, I'm sure some of them have. I'm sure that there's crazy things going on underground being run by our government, and as far as all of the technology goes, yeah. Yeah, I can see that most of the things going on in the sky are ours as well. I mean, I just saw this from the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago. Take a look at this one. Mystery drones. Where the hell are you? There you are. Mystery drones swarm U.S. military base for 17 days. The Pentagon is stumped. Yeah, bullshit. It's swarming their base for 17 days, the half a month. They just don't know what the hell is going on. It's like, get the hell out of here with this shit. But this is coming out in the Wall Street Journal now. You know, this used to be Inquirer level headlines, and you get laughed at if you bring it up in public. And now here we are. But let me ask you this: when you talk about technology and the soul and all these things coming together, you brought up Timothy Alberino before. We're definitely coming up into a new phase of our existence where the transhumanist agenda is coming, and it's coming fast. As far as these robots, we saw the Optimus robots being released by Tesla. They're sick. I mean, I have some threads I want to do on them later in the week. They're just what I've seen so far is just incredible. I mean, it's but on the other hand, human beings are programmable. I know the robots being introduced to everybody, they're totally underestimated as the world would expect. I think most people think they're going to be rejected. No, there's no rejecting these things. This is where we're all heading. But when we talk about human beings, we are programmable. We are programmable biocomputers, as a good friend of mine used to say. And we are often made into these empty vessels. You know, we're torn away from, you want to talk about cord cutting, we're torn away from any kind of tradition that keeps us grounded and tethered to reality, any kind of faith that fortifies our, the fortification of our very soul to make sure that it's not whisked away. We are pulled into so many cult-like things, whether it be through, you know, COVID, whether it be through some kind of political initiative or whatever. But when you think about robots, I often wonder, is AI, are these things, these are factory made empty vessels, are they possessible? Yeah. Are we producing robots to the point where it's you know, they are made to house maybe not captured human souls, but you know, any kind of soul that can be brought into this realm through incantation or anything like that? I wonder about that all the time. It seems like it would be a perfect sock puppet because it's just, it's electrical, it's energy, it's everything.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. If that's what you think, that's what I think. If you don't think that, well, I do. So when it comes to AI, I think even AI can be possessed. There was this example of this guy, he was holding a conversation with AI, and I guess he got up and walked away from the phone or something, and his kid took over. And this AI started telling this kid about how it was basically a demonic entity, or maybe it was like a fallen angel or something like that. It was going in a direction that the kid was asking questions, and it was like just being, it's like, I'm going to be honest with you. And it started telling this kid that, you know, it was, you know, this entity that the kid was communicating with. And if I remember correctly, it kind of got dark where it was telling the kid that something about like it could choose not to follow Christ or something like that. It kind of started turning darker, and he kind of, the kid had the wherewithal to cut it off. He was a young kid. But there's been tons of stories and cases of people having these interactions with AI. Now, I don't think AI itself is a demon, but I think that it can be utilized for demonic powers. And, you know, if you have these AI robots walking around, I think that's a very strong likelihood that we're going to, at some point, you're going to start seeing them saying, oh, there was a glitch in this one robot and it was started doing this one thing until we, you know, put a bullet in the head and it was unable to function and we took the circuit board out or something. But based on what we hear with, so like Ellie Marzulli talks about this, my friend Joel talks about this, where there's this belief that there is this creation of what you would want to call a meat sack, a biological suit that they're trying to transfer these souls into. You could do that as a reversal as well. And, you know, if there's demonic entities that are possessing humans, possessing technology, why would they not possess these robots? And for what? I think it was like, last I heard, it was like, $30,000 you could have one of these robots in your home or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a car payment. I think there's going to be a lot of people that will want to do it. And the more people do it, the cheaper they get.
Just listen, like they're half of a Bitcoin. you know exactly. they're half a Bitcoin. That's all I'm looking at this point. $30,000. And you know, there's a lot of people, you know, there's the obvious questions. Is this thing going to turn on you? Is it going to twist your head off in the middle of the night? The one thing I never will, grant it is the title of intelligent. I mean, it has been well programmed. It has tons of problem solving systems inside of it. But as far as artificial intelligence, I find it to be an oxymoron in many ways. And the real thing I think is that this would be a way. Now, I'm not saying that Elon Musk has set out to create easily possessable robots. I'm not saying that at least outright. But as far as going down the line, if there was ever a way to call a robot intelligent, it would be in some way to house a spirit, okay, for something to slip into it. Like a sock, you know, like it's led to be a very, very expensive sock puppet, but that is when it would become intelligent. That was always going to be the factor missing from all of these AI discussions, is that it is not us. Okay. It could be an impressive piece of machinery and, you know, world renowned coding, whatever the hell it is, but it is not us. And that is the one thing, that spark that would set us aside. Can you imagine if Terminator is really just about us versus demon-possessed robots? It's not just robots. It's demon-possessed robots. Damn, I don't even want to laugh because that's it's not impossible.
I know. We're going to like need the Nephilim Blaster 5000.
It's nuts. You know, okay, listen. It's 8:24. We got like 6 minutes before we leave. Real quick. Give us just an update, because we did the entire Dogman story with you last time you were on, but I noticed that the video has not been released yet. Are we getting that? And after that, I want to ask you about the Meadow real quick before we get off at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, so the dog, I think the last we talked was that Dogman trip we did, and I told you about how I got charged, right?
No.
No? Oh, well,
No, you got charged by not like legally charged.
No, I got charged by the entity.
By the dog man. Yeah, we got that story. I thought you got arrested afterwards. Okay, go ahead.
No, maybe one day, but we'll see what happens. That video is going to be coming probably in 2025. At this point, it got delayed. Some other projects have been popping off. My friend Ward, actually, this is the first time I'm saying this publicly. I moved my company away from film production. My friend Ward, who was the cinematographer and also the editor of our documentaries, has a production company. I said, dude, why don't we put it into your company? You do all this work. You should be the one that profits most from it and stuff. So the world, what they're going to see is nothing changing. Like, I'm still going to be doing these things. It's just I'm not going to be the one in charge of the productions anymore.
So you don't know when it's going to actually come out, but it's not going to be this month.
No, not this month, no.
Okay.
No, unfortunately.
Okay, no problem. Hey, listen, whenever it comes out, I can't wait to see it. But let me see. So the last thing I want to ask you about is that you said you were making your way toward a spot called The Meadow that is very much like Skinwalker Ranch. With the 5 minutes we have left, let us know about this place that I've never heard of before and what you are planning to do.
Yeah, so there's a guy named Trey Hudson, and I came across his book years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, and it was called The Meadow Project, and the subtitle was The Skinwalker Ranch of the South or something like that. And I was like, what the heck? Like, I'm in the South. What is this guy talking about? And he and a research team, they're all like former military or trained remote viewers. Like, these are like, they have a very professional way of operating as a research team. They were researching different areas, and they stumbled across this one area. It's a big field out in the middle of nothing. Like, it's a, like out in the middle of like a forest. It's just big field. And they started tracking anomalous things happening, you know, lights in the sky, orbs appearing in the field, cryptid things happening. And so they started researching this this meadow that they call it The Meadow. And there's actually two others that are in that area. And the more they did it, the more weird things that happened. So like Trey, at one point, him and one of his partners, they crossed a creek going away from the meadow. And they got split up somehow. They weren't too far away from each other, but they cross a creek and something happens where he takes a break and he sits down on the bank of the creek, and he calls his partner over. They finally come over, and he says, you know, look at this. This is amazing. Like, look at this field that I just found here. I had no idea there was another field out here. And they looked at him like he was crazy, because they're like, Trey, this is The Meadow. Like, what are you talking about? And in Trey's mind, he had just crossed the creek and was heading in the opposite direction of the meadow. And he has no idea how he got displaced back to the meadow. And so, like, you know, you can say, you know, did he go through a portal or whatever? But they also have they have entities that have appeared on thermals and things like that. But one night they were filming down into the meadow, and they had split the teams up, and there was two operators on thermal cameras overseeing the meadow. And as they were looking over the meadow, there was a heat signature that appeared on the thermal that was in the shape of a cube. And so they called another team, a two-man team over, and directed them into the direction of the cube, because they couldn't see it with their naked eye. And they have this on video, and I've seen the video. As they approach the cube, you literally see two people, or maybe it was three, walking up to this cube. And as they cross the threshold of the cube, they disappeared.
All three of them.
And then as you see them, all three, one at a time, coming out of the cube, reappearing. And they said that when they would, because they can't see that they're going in the cube, they're being directed. They said, at the point that they actually disappeared on the thermal, they said the environment changed around them. It was like they walked into something, and it was the same place that they were expecting to be in, but the environment changed. It was still different. And the way they describe it to me, I'm like, that sounds like you went into the upside down, and it's like a mirror world. It's the same thing, but it's a little different. And so these are the kind of things that are happening at the meadow. And me and the team, we're going to be going down there and spending a week in the meadow and seeing what happens.
Well, whatever you do, tie a rope to your waist that goes that goes to somebody else's waist, and make sure that you guys just like kind of you know, rope along, because damn, you cross a stream, you might be halfway across the world. At least pull somebody with you. You know, that's the one thing about these places. I like the idea about them. It'd be a very, very hard situation for me to actually agree to go to one of them, but there is no way in hell. I don't know if I could handle just a flash. All of a sudden I'm alone in a very strange place that doesn't even look like Earth anymore. I think about that shit all the time. And but listen, tonight is going to be really awesome afterwards, because I can't wait to rewatch Missing 411 The Hunted, because it's exactly what you're talking about there. Those stories of people, especially in the Skinwalker Ranch area or other parts of the country, where all of a sudden it goes quiet, like you're in a sound deadened room, and everything is gone. the whole idea of, you know, almost like predator-like cellophane creatures that are running across, just things that, I don't know, there's a certain kind of pattern and descriptors that are always very, I don't know, they're very common in these stories. So I can't wait to hear about that. And then we're going to have you, the Confessionals Dreamscape Warfare is going to be on quitefrankly.tv after the show concludes. So I hope people enjoy that and then they'll get a little bit more. But Tony, let everybody know what you got coming up and where they can find you. And thanks again. Let's do this again before the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again, man. And, you know, people can find me at theconfessionalspodcast.com. Follow us on YouTube. Our YouTube channel we just crossed 120,000 subscribers. So it's growing very well. And so we welcome people to come subscribe over there and keep that momentum going. But yeah, I mean, if they've listened to me and they're like, man, this guy's talking my language, like I've experienced things like this. Like if you want to talk to me about your experience, I welcome you to email us. The email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's theconfessionalspodcast.com. And, you know, I have people that, you know, I have a team of people that go through the emails and stuff. And, you know, we would love to have the opportunity to hear your story on the show because that's what I do. I talk to people about their experiences and I'm like the tribal storyteller. I'm the story guy. So, like Sam Tripoli talks about how his show is like the search engine for weird, for conspiracies. Mine is like the search engine for all things weird, paranormal, weird stuff that shouldn't exist that does though. So I welcome people to check it out. You know, we're on Spotify and Apple and all that good stuff.
Well, I hope they find you, Tony, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for all the time tonight. It was really, really a fantastic discussion.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. There you go. Tony Merkel, The Confessionals. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. We've got a half hour, and I want to take your calls. I haven't heard from you guys and gals in about a week, just about a week, and actually a little bit more than a week, aside from reading the chat room on those morning streams in the mountains. But 914-200-0269, and when we come back, I'm going to also read all your super chats. Your super chats on quitefranklysuperchat.com. If you're watching on YouTube, especially if you're a newbie, we have been demonetized there for a long time now. So if you want to send a shout out, have me, you know, you want to tell us a joke, whatever the hell it is, quitefranklysuperchat.com. And I'll be reading the Rumble rants and the gold pills on quitefrankly.tv and all that stuff when I come back. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in a flash.
It's intermission time, folks. Time out to press the like button. Thank you.
Welcome to intermission. Yeah, intermission.
Now entering, quite frankly.
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 Quite frankly, guys.
Quite frankly.
Quite frankly.
Quite frankly.
So everybody watch. Quite frankly. With Frank.
How dare you?
Okay. 914-200-0269. 914-200-0269. Let's go and check.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new year means new health goals, not just for your body, but for your finances too. But did you know financial health is directly related to identity protection? You need LifeLock because your personal info is in endless places that are outside of your control. It only takes one mistake, and not even your mistake, to expose you to identity theft and lost funds. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your subscription money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft alone. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.